back. You're watching Stockwatch. Joining me in studio this evening are David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. You can SMS us. Stock in the question to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. David, Wayne, nice to have you both. And it's always comforting to have Wayne on a night when the Rand goes on a tear in the wrong direction. Because we need a voice to soothe our
look, this is local politics and the deputy president and the integrity commission and the public protectors investigate, and it's all of this. But we'll find out the true state of affairs in less than half an hour.
Yes.
As to who is actually in the cabinet and what has the state president been able to do and what has he not been able to do. So we'll find out the sort of, I suppose, an end result of this quite soon. Yeah. But of course, Donald Trump saying he's not ready for a trade deal with China did not help. It did not help.
More important is 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Yes.
What's happening at 9 o'clock?
What's happening at 9 o'clock, then? What's happening
at 9 o'clock?
It's Arsenal
Chelsea. Now it's very important because
this is the sort of pissy Europa League.
It opens the door to Champions
It's the small league. It's the children's league.
Okay, well, obviously, seeing as we're David supporters, we're Arsenal.
We'll go with Arsenal tonight.
The thing is, the Rand's woes today were the stock market's fortunes because we closed 1% high. Was that purely in the back of Rand hedges?
We went down so much the day before. It's actually the shares that got pounded yesterday were the ones that went up today. You take first round, it was up 4%. So we weren't really saved by the Rand hedges, quite frankly. I mean, British American Tobacco was down for other reasons. AB InBev was down quite sharply. NicePass was okay, but it didn't shoot the lights out.
NicePass was 4%.
Was it that higher?
4%. Okay, well, the unbundling or the capitalization issue is going to take place at the end of July. So 4% equals 1% on the index.
Market, yeah.
I didn't expect that kind of reaction because when we opened this morning, Tencent was down about 1.5% in China, and I thought that we'd have a similar issue. But 4% is a major reaction, and that has a major influence on the rest of it. Mm. But it was a pretty mixed market. I think what's happening and my assessment, why we're turning around, I think that a lot of fund managers just say enough's enough, you know, we've fallen far enough, value's starting to emerge. I don't fully agree with it, I still think there's more to go, but you start to see buying coming in, and they were particularly aggressive in some of the financial stocks. Yeah.
I mean, do you agree, Wayne?
Do you have
more of a local bent or bias, shall I say?
It's just opportunistic in my view. I think there's an opportunity. I mean, over time, you must have a significant proportion of your money exposed to, let's call it, non-South African investments, because the prospects for the South African economy, it can bounce up quite sharply from this very low level, and the shares in particular. But that's opportunistic. It's not a case of this is a structural plus. It's a structural 20-year winner, South African shares, not by any stretch as we see things now. But I spent a bit of time this morning looking at what are the valuations for the South African shares? And I very simplistically said, what's the dividend yield versus the long bond rate? In other words, the relationship between the two. I left earnings out because earnings can be extremely variable. I said, how much cash is being distributed via shares versus the long bond rate? And I looked at the retail, all the consumer stocks, I looked at the banks, and I looked at financials. And all of them show a very consistent pattern. The dividend yield is almost at record 20-year highs against the long bond yield, i.e. cheap, for want of a better word, other than the 2008 when the world was coming to an end. There they were significantly cheaper, as I said, for want of a better word. Now, of course, all of this assumes that only holds if you assume that future dividend payments are going to be roughly the same as past dividend payments. If we go into a recession and dividends just disappear, then the shares could very well be extremely expensive. Mm. But on the assumption that the future hopefully will be equal to the past, if not hopefully a bit better than the past, then this relationship shows reasonably good value. But of course, it doesn't mean that they can't fall anymore. Anything can happen.
And it doesn't mean that you're not going to get shocks.
I think that's one of my worries, is that if we assess the results that have come through recently, I think they've surprised us more on the downside than on the upside. And my view is that the lack of top line growth, in other words, that the revenue is starting to hurt. You can cut costs, you can introduce efficiencies, but up to a point.
Yeah.
And I think we have to go through that cycle first, which is exactly what Wayne's saying.
But look, when you look at this, let's just say the next 10 years South Africa grows at current rates, 1%, which is what we've grown at for the last 3 years. Then your top line doesn't grow, as David said. I mean, you're lucky to get like on like 1% growth. Your expenses are going up 4, 5, 6%. So you are being squeezed. Now, at the moment, everyone's cutting costs, but they haven't made a structural change, really. And if this continues, if we continue at 1% for the next 2, 3, 4 years, I don't know how long, companies will have to make a structural change. They will have to get rid of 20% of their people. They'll have to close 15% of their stores. They would actually do a structural rebasing of their cost base. So all they're doing now is trying to limit the cost increases to 3% instead of 5%. Yeah. But if this carries on, you are going to be so squeezed that you're going to actually have to literally downsize your business.
Yeah.
You're already seeing it in places like Standard Bank, where today a modern bank, you don't need bricks and mortar. You only need a computer. And you'll see them closing down offices and closing down old branches and that.
I mean, the other option is for you, if you are, as you said, you need a significant proportion of your wealth in offshore or offshore exposed stocks. Then you think, okay, well, let me back the South African companies that are expanding offshore. But then, of course, disaster ensues. So would rather buy the offshore companies, because we seem to be the greenhorns that wander dewy-eyed into the shark.
I've actually been thinking about this often.
My metaphors are getting very confused.
What have we learned from all of this? Number one, intensely more competitive overseas than South Africa. This market is backward when it comes to true competition. Secondly, you don't understand the market and the people. You from Africa going into the northern regions or somewhere else, you're just not part of the show. And then thirdly, very great arrogance by successful South Africans.
Yeah, because
you think you've done such a great job here, and you'll show those limeys how it's done. But fourthly, every single time that I can think of, they've bought basket cases, they've bought companies that were already in trouble with turnarounds, thinking that with all of these disadvantages, that you are going to go there and make this company that's already a bit of a problem, you know, rather overpay for a successful company. And maybe that's the key when you go overseas. Overpay for a successful company. Don't go and try and find a bargain. We'll fix it up. No problem. We'll fix it.
There's a reason it's a bargain.
There's a reason it's a problem. And you maybe haven't got the requisite skills to actually sort it out.
You just had famous brands.
I mean, it's unfair to pick out famous brands, but there's lots. Okay, well, let's talk about those famous brands results. There aren't any questions, interestingly. But David, I mean, you're saying that actually, if you go through the financials, you shouldn't look at the drop in headline earnings. You should look at the fact that they've reported a net loss of 420 million rand.
It's not Darren's fault. You know, he was given a hospital pass, and he's got to clean up the mess that was made by previous management, and has to sort it all out. But they're writing off hundreds of millions of rands.
And these are acquisitions
that were made within one, two, 3 years. How do they go bad so quickly? So I look at the proper accounts, you know, and I was joking with you. I said, you know, we would love to do it in our profession. I'd love to buy you a share at 100 when it goes to 50. Sorry, Julieta. That's gone. You know, we're now going to start at 50 and we'll measure our performance.
When you get to 55, you say it's a 10% gain.
We can't do it in our profession, but somehow every other business in the world can do it. And I must say,
it annoys the hell out of me. It's a book entry. Yeah. There's no cash. You paid that money out when you bought that. Yeah. That was proper cash. Writing it down now is actually, you lost money.
Yeah.
It's not a book entry.
So would you buy famous brands after all of this?
Look, let's try and be objective here. South African consumer brands actually doing reasonably well. So the sort of fast food, quick service restaurant, casual dining restaurant. They had problems in their signature brands here.
So in other words, the Tashes.
I don't think Tashes was a problem, but there were a few others that were a problem. They got rid of one. They closed a couple here. They stopped a few things here. And they seem to have rectified that. They closed the tomato sauce, tomato juice, tomato puree thing. They closed that. And that's where they did a bit of a write-off. So the South African operations in this economic environment doesn't look too bad. And then we go overseas. Mm-hmm. Seem to be doing quite well in the Middle East with Tashas and that. So that's fine. UK, Wimpy is struggling a little bit. But of course, the big one there is the Gourmet Kitchen Burger. But they've slashed the branches. Mm-hmm. And according to them, the last two or three or four months actually looks quite encouraging from the very low base. But, and here's the but, the share still looks expensive. Eh? Mm-hmm. Mm. This is a 20 PE.
Yeah.
It's a 20 PE for a loss-making, not a loss-making company, but
well, it is
company,
well,
it company is, that yeah, earnings, that recurring earnings are going down, and they haven't turned the corner yet.
Okay, so give this one
I would
a
say, if it was a 10 PE, you're talking.
Okay. Getting on to questions. One of the big deals in the last
Wayne's
couple of
top
days.
Form tonight.
Yeah, Wayne's on a roll. Sibanye and Lonmin inking their deal. And the question is, please ask the panel's view on Sibanye after the Lonmin news.
Looking at it, I'm not quite sure why the market has responded so positively to it. 10% yesterday, another 4-5%. Likewise with Lonmin. You put them together, it doesn't mean that the problems are going to go away, that you're suddenly going to resolve it. Sibanye still has massive debt on its balance sheet, and even more so now that it's taken over Lonmin. The platinum price, if you look at it, is $800 an ounce below. Yes, the rand has given them a little bit of help. Yeah. Palladium's also coming down from its heady levels of around about 16. So, I think when you look at the underlying fundamentals, not that encouraging, but the market seems to like it.
Look, when you look at all of this, understand you're buying Sibanye, you're buying essentially a call option on the platinum-palladium basket. Now, they got the U.S. acquisition. The timing, luck, what call it what you like, was perfect. They caught that palladium run like you cannot believe. Now, platinum over time cannot stay at 800 because no one's making money. Making money on palladium, but not making money on platinum. And it's got to rectify, that gap has got to rectify between palladium and platinum at some stage.
Is it because also, if Sibanye has taken over Lonmin, you almost take out another producer and now you've got the control of how much is mined or produced. So you don't have too many loss-making firms just churning out production, keeping the prices of the metal suppressed. Correct. Now you've got a bit more control over how much...
Look, the biggest negative on platinum was actually this whole diesel story and the catalysts. But that can be changed because you can swap between platinum and palladium in your exhaust. And the actual, and this is the dilemma, the 10-year outlook actually looks quite good because every single government in the world, even though motor car sales are down, you can't believe it, passenger car sales are down quite significantly. That's why Jaguar Land Rover are in trouble. I mean, they're actually down 4, 5, or 6% globally. It's quite big. But every government in the world is loading, is increasing the loading of platinum and palladium in the exhaust because of pollution. So the demand, the 10-year demand, even with electric cars and everything, is actually quite good for these metals.
We hope.
It hasn't
come through yet. You know what I mean? And all
fairness, palladium.
It came through palladium.
But then mainly there's going to be substitution.
But it's got there's a lot of work that has to be done at Lonmin.
But I mean, put up the Impala share price. Okay. Then would you buy at these share prices? Mm-hmm. And Impala was $35-25 not that long ago.
And where's it shot trading at the moment?
The roof.
I mean, but is it in,
Well, last year was a platinum.
57 rand. But if you take a 5-year share price,
forget about it.
You're still half.
Even half. What was in Platinum's high? 600?
I can't remember, to be honest.
Well, this is when platinum was almost 2,000.
Anglo Platts high was 1,500 or 1,400.
Yeah. Moving on. We mentioned NASPASS, 4% up today. And the question was, please explain NASPASS's unbundling, M or N shares.
You've got the choice. So you've got the choice. If you stay with the M shares, that will entitle you to this new business in Amsterdam. If you stay with the N shares, you get more local shares as well. So you've got the choice whether you want the offshore business or the local business.
But the offshore business still owns a sizable proportion of the local one, owns a sizable portion of the offshore. So you don't divorce yourself from it.
Yeah. No. But you might have more exposure to what happens offshore and how they construct that business.
Because the only difference between here will be one or two businesses. Over the broader business, you will have exactly the same assets.
Very little difference, actually.
Why they've done that, I'm not quite sure. There isn't a reason for it. I think one of the issues is it's a capitalization share. So the big debate was whether or not that will be taxable as a dividend. No. So what happens, that will come into your books as zero value. And only when you sell it will you pay capital gains. That's been a big debate that everyone's talking about, how they will treat this so-called capitalization issue. But you've got the choice.
Yeah.
You know, you can choose whether you want to stay with Naspers, more Naspers, or you want to go into offshore.
I have to say, choice sometimes is a terrible thing. And we'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions, please do SMS us or email us or tweet us, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to the markets at the moment, starting off with U.S. markets down. The S&P down 0.75%, NASDAQ similarly weaker, and the Dow Jones just over 1% in the red. And across the Atlantic, you've had the FTSE 100 pulling back 1.2%, the CAC down 1.7%, the CAC 40, the DAX rather, down 1.6%. We bucked the trend closing up today.
Only because we fell yesterday.
Yes, so we did our damage yesterday. Yeah. Anything to be said about U.S. markets?
This is again Donald Trump and trade wars, and now China wants to restrict the exportation of heavy minerals, heavy metals that they're using batteries and. Yes.
Oh. As Yogi Berra said, you know, it's deja vu all over again.
Yogi Berra came out with a few pearls.
Yeah, he died recently. But I mean, it suddenly get this December type feeling where everything is plotting against you. And it feels like that. You know, you've got U.S. Treasuries now at, 2.2. I think, 2.2 or something. So there's a 13-point gap between.
I mean, they were over 3% at the start.
Yeah, they were just over. No, they weren't. They just went over 3.
Long time ago, when.
Oh, long time ago, they were 5.
Yeah. So. So
in other words, people are rushing to safe haven assets.
Well, they're worried. You know, no one knows what's next. You know, you can't read. He's unplayable, Trump, and you don't know what the longer, you know, what his long game is. And how he's going to pull out of this.
Because he's literally in the same words, he says, I'm not interested in doing a deal with China now, but don't worry, we will do a deal.
Yeah.
He just likes to keep us all on our toes. A&H, is that...
Anheuser-Busch.
So the question is, if you take out the intangibles, it's insolvent. A bit like Steinhoff. Is this a stay-away share? I like it, but that's scary.
A&H.
I don't know, but they carry huge intangibles. If it's Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah.
A&H, yeah.
But intangibles being the prices that they paid for the various businesses.
The difference between what they paid, the 1,000 rand a share, whatever they paid for SAV, versus its book value of 200 rand. You paid 800 rand to profits. Mm. You bought the brands, you bought the product. You bought
a brand name. So you can't produce those beers without that brand name.
But I mean, I would say that the difference, hopefully I'm correct here, between Anheuser-Busch and Steinhoff is that Steinhoff had incredibly complex accounting. Mm. It had all these businesses where you kind of know what the brewer does. So yes, they may have paid, overpaid for some of the businesses.
Look, if you take Coca-Cola's intangible value out, you'll also have a negative value in that. But
literally a minute. When you buy a business, you are paying for intangibles. Because if you're only buying the asset, you could just go to the shop and buy the assets and start the business.
Yeah.
So whenever you buy something, you're paying for intangibles, something that can't create just simply by buying the assets that make that product. So it's not unusual to buy intangibles. Yeah. So it all depends on the return that you get from the total price. Mm. So if you buy SAB but you make a 15% return, it's wonderful. If you buy SAB and you make a 3% return, then you overpaid.
What are you getting?
You're getting the brand name.
Okay.
So you're getting the brand name of Budweiser, or you're getting the brand name of Castle. You can't. That has a brand in the value in a shop. When you walk into a shop and you see a Castle brew, you know what's in that bottle.
Yeah. Okay. So my question is, I can't verify the return.
We do know it's overgeared, and we do know they are struggling to show a decent return on their assets. And the share looks expensive to me. I would be cautious on, despite the weakness that we've seen, I would be cautious on Anheuser.
Would you buy any other brewers, or do you think it's...
Heineken's done well. Mm. You know, Heineken seems to have outperformed. We have seen beer sales picking up very slightly, but I think there's a long road. It's a very, very tough industry because of so much competition. Your competition is not other beer manufacturers.
No, it's
other spirits and whiskey spirits and other things.
Anything else that someone might consume. No. Okay. Good evening, the two wise men. Please give your opinion on Brait at the current levels.
No. Okay. And can I say, you were the person who just told me a story.
I was sitting in the Virgin Active. Yeah, I went for a quick swim before the show, if everyone needs to know this. And in the steam room, a spinning instructor was sitting on the level in front of me saying...
A male
spinning... Well, you know, it's a unisex sauna. Okay. And he was saying that he's noticed a big drop in... people attending classes. Mm. So he's seeing people going to Viva, which is another gym chain, or trading down to Virgin Red, which is a sort of,
Well, that's the best research you can get, you know, from people like that, showing membership is...
It's always good to get that sort of evidence, but, I mean, one person doesn't make the whole representative of Virgin Active. Look, Virgin Active, Iceland Food, is it Premier?
Premier.
And Iceland Food... These are actually not bad businesses, if a little boring. I mean, they're not bad businesses. But, of course, New Look is at zero. And in the last thing they had to read, they had to write down all the other businesses. I suppose it's a question of share price. I wouldn't touch it now, but it's a question of share price. Because what they should do is just literally give away New Look. And just take those three businesses. Maybe you
they've
can
got
get
a liability there. They've got a contingent liability.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't buy it now. But I think what you said is
a worry I always have over gyms. People are very keen to add, you know, when they're making money. As soon as they're not making money, the first thing they give up are their gym memberships because they're expensive.
Yeah, it's discretionary.
And a gym can't just downgrade. You know, you've got to keep up with modern equipment. You've got to keep the steam room going. Electricity.
Okay. Old Mutual with this kerfuffle over Peter Moyo. I mean,
it's far-reaching. It's far-reaching in the sense that you appointed a man whose loyalties were to run Old Mutual. They were more towards, you know, reading
his
through the
vehicle.
Lines, his own vehicle. And for Trevor Manuel to have made a decision like that for a man who supposedly had a very strong reputation just points maybe towards the culture. The other thing is that the results weren't good. I don't know if you picked up on the quarterly trading. They weren't good. They had to downgrade their short-term to medium-term outlook. So understand they're not meeting their targets as well.
In a company as big as Old Mutual, it's not made by one person. Mm. Whether you're there or whether you leave or who replaces you, it's a big company. It's a big one.
So I don't think that's maybe a distraction. But it's the results that they're expecting to produce.
And there's two sides to every single story. There's two sides to every story, but it doesn't reflect well on Old Mutual.
Mm-hmm. No, and also maybe the point is like you parachute someone in who's not an actuary. Do you not need actuaries to run insurance companies?
You need a salesperson to run a life assurance. Life insurance is a selling organization. It's how you actually make your business successful, is you actually sell. I mean, I sometimes think the worst thing you can do, with exceptions, is parachute an actuary.
Okay. I'm not sure. There's quite a few questions. Can you ask, please? Okay, I'm going to save that to you. We can incorporate stock picks with that. So, David, you better come up with something. Please ask your guests which three local shares they'd buy at current levels of valuations for a 3-year view. I mean, are there any that's going to...
I don't know about the time, but I'll buy some of the banks, buy Standard Bank, looks by ShopRite. I think ShopRite looks actually very, very, very good value.
But Gordy was your last week's pick.
Yeah.
it's difficult to find.
Yeah. Cap are Roynet. Roynet, the questions were, are there good buys at 7 Rand and 70
maybe,
Rand?
Maybe we go buy by Pepco now.
Yeah.
After today's result.
I had a very unhappy Pepco shopping experience today. So based on my gym experience and my Pepco experience.
You're not happy.
Cap's results, but the share's also been going the wrong way. I don't know.
I don't know enough about Roynet.
The results were out as well. Also disappointing. Battling along there. I don't know what consists of Roynet. I remember what they used to be.
They used to
have a cable company.
They still have that.
Do they?
Yeah. And they used to
well,
have
that's
all the
not
defense
exactly
companies.
Where you want to be is building cables where there's no infrastructure spend.
No, until that starts coming through.
And also they had very high electronics, like defense electronics, etc. But I think it's a very tough area.
Yeah. Okay, well, stock picks this evening. And
David's
wimping out again.
You know what?
So June,
I don't like
you're going to have
markets.
To have a stage
again.
Comeback.
Yeah, I know. Whenever I see red all over the screen as you show
whole nature changes. He doesn't like red.
It depresses me, no.
Okay, well, Wayne, thankfully, has come
out,
to the party.
Going out a bit in the limb, yes, Sasol, I know it's not the flavor of the month. But even with all the bad news with Lake Charles and everything thrown in a pot, as long as the oil price doesn't collapse, and who knows what will happen with there, Sasol can make, in 2 years' time, 50, 60 bucks a share earnings. You put that even at an incredibly low price earnings ratio, there's quite a bit of upside from this level.
Okay, so you don't think they... Yeah.
They're still dependent on the oil price more so than management.
Yeah, because chemicals is, of course, how they want to transform this company, and that
well,
was
what Lake
Charles
chemicals is still related to oil. They make no mistake, they're not two separate things.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm seeing too many bearish sides on there. You know, by nature, I'm a bull, but not at the moment.
No, we have to leave it there. Right, David Wayne, thank you very much for joining us this evening. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments, and we'll be back tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. Stock picks this evening, and David's wimping out again.
Again.
June,
I don't like
you're going to have to have a stage
again.
Comeback.
Yeah, I know. Whenever I see red all over the screen, as you show,
whole nature
now,
changes.
Just,
he doesn't like red.
Depresses me, no.
Okay, well, Wayne, thankfully, has come
out,
to the party.
Going out a bit in the limb, yes, Sasol, I know it's not the flavor of the month. But even with all the bad news with Lake Charles and everything thrown in a pot, as long as the oil price doesn't collapse, and who knows what will happen with there, Sasol can make, in 2 years' time, 50, 60 bucks a share earnings. You put that even at an incredibly low price earnings ratio, there's quite a bit of upside from this level.
Okay, so you don't think they... Yeah.
They're still dependent on the oil price more so than management.
Yeah, because chemicals is, of course, how they want to transform this company, and that
well,
was what
chemicals
Lake Charles
is still
is
related
about.
To oil. They make no mistake, they're not two separate things.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm seeing too many bearish sides on there. You know, by nature, I'm a bull, but not at the moment.
No, we have to leave it there. Right, David Wayne, thank you very much for joining us this evening. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments, and we'll be back tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening.